mysterious wreckage making my head swoon. Serious wreckage, brown bag on the midnight moon. Serious wreckage, wet, wet, bloody wet. One drink to remember, one more to forget that serious.
How are you, Steve? Welcome to PNP Network.
Thank you.
You have a couple things going on right now. You have a brand new solo CD and a new CD with Kansas out.
Yes.
Kind of busy.
Well, yeah. I'm also involved in a project for a Catholic church in St. Joseph, Missouri, that's my hometown. And that's the school that I went to and the church that my parents and I went to. And I'm doing a Christmas song for them, for a Christmas album that they're putting out.
Cool.
So
that'll be a solo type of deal for that one, the Christmas song?
Well, they've put together the backing, and yes, I'm singing on a song. It's a cover by John Lennon.
Oh, the song, and so this is Christmas, that one?
That's it.
Ah, great song.
Sure is.
Yeah. It's kind of nice to that so much great music is around, and some of it, of course, is your responsibility.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's amazing when you look back at the career that Kansas had, for instance, selling over 30 million albums, and then I'm looking at your new CD, which has a name that's pretty hard to pronounce.
Uh-huh.
Why don't you tell us how that's pronounced?
Glossolalia.
Glossolalia. And what exactly is that from?
Well, it's from the dictionary.
Okay.
And it means speaking in tongues.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, like a big glossary, huh? Glossolalia. What made you name the album after that?
It was suggested to me after Chip, my good friend and photographer friend who lives in my neighborhood, actually. He's an artist, and he said, after hearing some of my material, you know, a word comes to mind, and he said that word, and I was attracted to it because it kind of sums up what I think my solo album is trying to do, is mm-hmm. speak in many tongues.
Well, I think that I was going to mention that. It certainly is. You cannot pigeonhole that CD into one kind of music. You get all kinds of music roaring through that.
Uh-huh.
And some really good music too, as a matter of fact.
Thanks.
You know, I didn't know what to think of or to expect when I got the CD. I guess I would like everybody else figuring you're going to sound like Kansas, but certainly you sound like Steve Walsh, not Kansas. And there's some great, great music on this thing.
Thanks.
In fact, one of the songs, "Serious Wreckage," I think should be required for all people who are convicted of drunk driving accidents.
Yeah. That's where I kind of I got into a couple of songs by Peter Gabriel, and I was listening to them, and one of them deals with the one of them seems to deal with the Kennedy assassination, and I thought, well, this is great because he is suggesting something that I'm not quite sure of, but I can relate it to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought to myself, well, you know, I'm imagining now that over the past 30 years I might have caused someone some kind of distress. Let me see if I can deepen it any. And I did, and I was able to kind of imagine what it would be like from the perpetrator's point of view.
Well, it's an interesting song. And in fact, on many levels, because it has different types of rhythms to it as well.
Yeah.
And I always think songs like that are amazing. There's a couple of songs in here that are real epics. One of them is Smackin' the Clowns, which, when you listen to it, I had to listen to it a few times. It appears to be about children losing their innocence a little too young.
Well, that's the individual take on it. The broad take is that in 1944 there was a fire at a Ringling Brothers circus in the Northeast. I want to say Hartford, Connecticut, or somewhere like that. And I don't recall right at the moment. And the thing about it is, I've got the book right upstairs. Anyway, a lot of people got killed and a lot of people got injured. And so in the broadest of terms, that's what that song kind of deals with. And then it narrows down to maybe one or two people's points of view.
Wow. Harry, I remember reading about that in some book somewhere, and it's hard to even imagine that kind of horror.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But you've also written about many other things in this thing, too. One of them, I'm trying to figure out the connection here, but there is a song called Rebecca, which is reminiscent of the Alfred Hitchcock movie with the same name.
Mm-hmm.
Is that based on that movie?
Yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm. What was it about the movie that inspired you to write a song?
Have you ever seen the movie?
I have.
Well, that should be obvious. It's a unbelievable movie in that it weaves such a web of mystery. It reminds me of a monster movie where you never see the monster.
Hmm.
Like Blair Witch, or even the old type of Evil Dead movie where you never really see the monster, but it's always chasing or something. That's what Rebecca, the personality of her, was. She was all encompassing and omnipresent, and yet never seen.
Your CD is I hate to use the word because it's so overused, but it's very deep. It's on a lot of levels.
Uh-huh.
I assume that you must be a complicated guy.
I don't know. I just write what I feel, and what I've been feeling lately is is that I have a lot of comfort now in that I've lost a lot of my fear and guilt in the past 2 or 3 years, in losing that fear and guilt, I was able to, I think, write on a lot more levels than just an anger level.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to, I think, for maybe the first time ever, feel lonely and write about it, or guilty of something without really being guilty of it, imagining what it would be like. I'm real proud of it, and everyone who helped me on it practically did so for nothing, if not for nothing, practically nothing.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about particularly one person, Trent Gardner, who is, of course, the keyboardist from Magellan. I understand that he really had a large part in this.
It would have never happened without Trent Gardner. It never would have happened. And I told Pete Morticelli that it would have never happened without Pete. And I said that on the album, or on the CD.
Yeah.
It's just impossible to imagine this ever happening without those two guys. One, because Pete came to me and asked me if I was interested in doing that, and second, because I said yeah, but I can't because of all this crap I do with Kansas. Well, what happened if we get somebody else involved? well, who is that somebody? And then it went from there to Trent.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. I mean, he's just real good. I hope to hell I get the opportunity to work with him again.
We should tell people who are listening that the Pete you talk about is the president of Magna Carta Records, which has released the newest Kansas CD and also your own CD. So they all know these things. The CD, is it available all over the country right now? Is it on the internet and stuff like that?
My CD?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure when it's going to be released. I think it's sometime early in September. But no, it's not out at the moment yet.
But I do know that they can go to the website magnacarta.net, magnacarta.net, and that will tell you when that comes out, and they'll be able to get it through that site.
Cool.
So that will be kind of cool. You know, I want to talk a little bit about Kansas with you, because it's had some incredible success. And I just want to know what it was like to be from the Midwest, get together a group with some of the guys, and have the kind of success you had. Is it conducive to staying together, or is it conducive to a lot of ego problems and people falling apart?
Well, it's just all depends on how you... It all depends on how mature you are, and... Oh, hell, I don't know. You know, I don't know if that's true or not, how mature you are, because, man, I mean, money changes everything.
It does, doesn't it?
It changes everything. So, you know, here we are, a bunch of bumpuses from Topeka, Kansas, and, you know, we've got our pride, and we've got our major influences. Which, you know, I mean, you're living in the middle of the country. You don't have an East Coast sound. You don't have a West Coast sound. And ain't nobody in the state of Kansas who's doing anything but covering tunes. So, you know, we'd gravitated toward the European type of stuff. King Crimson and Genesis and Gentle Giant, to name a few. And so... You know, you start out, we started out living in a band house on a dollar a day, and people say, oh, yeah, right. And that's what I'm telling you, is we gave a, people ask me for my advice as far as, you know, how can I make it big? How can I make it big splash in the recording industry? Well, do you have a day job? Yes. Do you have a family? Yes. Say goodbye to both, because that's what you got to do. You got to just... practically live in the midst of as many musicians that you trust and come to know as you can, and give up everything that even pertains to life itself.
Huh.
And that's what we did. We gave it all up and just kind of committed to each other. And, you know, my philosophy is everybody gets what they want in life. Everybody gets what they want. And we wanted to be players, so we became players. And, you know, that cost a lot of us a lot of stuff. And, you know, success is what we yearned for, but I can tell you truthfully, it's not the success that I remember. It's the climbing to the success that I remember. All those nights of driving back from who the hell knows where, in, you know, in Colorado or Kansas or Missouri, any one of those places, in a school bus that was freezing cold half the time. Those are the nights that I remember, the situations that we all came together and pulled through. Not the big hoopla of the, you know, the second encore at Madison Square Garden. That's a vague memory. I remember 30 years ago when we were really busting our balls to do something.
Do you remember the day you guys got this incredible check that you never thought you'd see a check like that in your life? What was the feeling then?
Well, there was several occasions where I do remember quite frankly the feeling and just a non-belief of it all. And one of them was when Don Kirshner called us, and we were playing in the basement of this oh God, it was the dankest, darkest place you've ever seen in Dodge City, Kansas. And how's that for a cliche? But that's where we were. We were playing right in the middle of Dodge City, and at some beer brawl, and we got a phone call from Don Kirshner. And that's one of them that I definitely remember, a moment that I'll definitely cherish. And the second one is when we signed a recording contract in Des Moines, Iowa. We were playing at a club, and we didn't have enough money to get a hotel room, so we were staying at some people's house that were kind of, you know, this was the hippie days back in 1972, 73, so. And so we were staying at some hippie's place, and and we got a recording contract in the mail, and we celebrated by going out. We couldn't all buy rib dinners, but we bought three and split them in half. That's what we did. And you know, there's several other instances like that that I can remember. They were pretty good. One of them was another one was when our manager called us and asked me if I wanted to increase my allowance. I was up to like $100 a week then, you know.
Yeah.
From a dollar a day to $100 a week. That was pretty cool.
Mhm.
And I said, well, yeah, that'd be great, you know. And I said, how much can I get? And he said, well, how much do you want? And at that time, I knew, ka-ching, something's going on here, man. We're doing something right here. And so, but like I said, money changes everything. And unfortunately, I was not as mature as I should have been, and I don't know. Hell, I don't know if it's pretty unbeatable odds when you get up there on stage and have 20,000 people yelling and screaming your name, and people are just throwing money at you. How else can you feel but that you are godlike, you know? And so that's what I became for a lot of years. I thought I could do no wrong, and I was mistaken. But you know, I think that just comes with maturity and stuff.
If you were as mature as you are now, would you have ever wanted to give up all the things you had to give up to get what you got?
See, that's you're asking an artist who is naturally insecure, as all artists are,
mm-hmm.
to do without one of his main life things, and that is creation. I don't know if that's possible. I mean, I think I was just made to be the way I am, and I think I would have practically done the same thing if I would have been given a choice. I probably would have done the same thing.
Sure.
You know, because I just... That's kind of just the way I think that now that I'm mature enough to look at other artists and read other people's work, and I'm just finding out that this insecurity is the whole reason why we think that we should be heard above anyone else around, or you know, we should be venerated by complete and total strangers.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an odd thing, what we wish for ourselves. And I don't know if I would have changed anything.
A couple questions before I let you go. One of them has to do with Napster. I'm asking all the folks I talk to in rock what they think of this newest development in terms of people being able to download music. Are you worried about some of the losses that occur because of things like that? Are you for it, against it?
I don't think it matters what I think personally. It's against the law. It's copyright infringement. It's as if people are saying, yeah, that's a great album, and we don't care if you ever do another, because we're not going to support you. We're not looking at the future of you. And so we're going to just take your property right now and use it for our own purposes, and we don't care if you ever have the money to do it again. People don't realize that, you know, that yeah, the business that exists, yeah, it sucks. I mean, record companies have way too much power and way too much money. And, you know, Napster might be the beginning of a new era when everybody goes, hey, we got to reconfigure this stuff right now, or else, you know, everything's going to go to hell. But, as usual, the artists that aren't multi-millionaires, big billionaire type of Madonna people who don't have lawyers out the kazoo, get bit on the butt, and that's us. Mm-hmm. We're just, you know, we're trying to eke out a living here, making an album for not a big record company. This is Magna Carta we're talking about. People who, you know, I mean, it's a lot to ask of Magna Carta to do what they're doing, and yet they're doing it. They're putting out ads and spending money on us to get the word out to people that this album is worth buying. So yeah, it hurts a little bit to be taken for granted a little bit, and that's the way I feel. I feel like it's just kind of being taken for granted.
Talking with Steve Walsh, who has a brand new CD will be coming out very shortly. It's called Glossolalia.
Glossolalia.
Yeah, I knew I wouldn't be able to pronounce it right. I could have bet you on that one. It's from Magna Carta Records, and we'll put a link up on our site so that you guys can go right to the site and check out that CD.
Hey, one thing I want to mention, too, is that there's a new web movie that we've got on KansasBand.com that I think is pretty cool, and so I invite people to go there to see this new movie.
KansasBand.com.
Yeah, that's our website.
Cool. And I'll send people over there, too. And the other thing, and one last question, this music today, what do you think of some of the new bands out? Do you think that the quality of music is as good today as it was, say, 30 years ago?
Well, you're talking in broad strokes, and so, yes, let me narrow it down a little bit. Perfect Circle, great album. Slipknot, a force to be reckoned with. Kid Rock, unbelievable performance at Woodstock 99. Limp Bizkit, can do without. Rage Against the Machine, unbelievable band. And, you know, those are people that I'm listening to right now. Fiona Apple, unbelievable artist. You know, I mean, damn, yeah, there's a lot of good music out. The complacency that people have toward new is astounding to me, because it reminds me of my father, who said there would be nobody better than Benny Goodman. Hey, you know, I mean, that was fine. He was an old fart, and you know, he believed what he believed. But, man, now I'm starting to hear this stuff all over again and thinking to myself, well, what about us? We got a new album out. Doesn't anyone want to hear what we're doing now? Why did they completely go ape over stuff that we did 25 years ago and not give our new stuff the time of day? That's what kills me about classic rock radio. I mean, no offense, but they're making their buck off of stuff we did 25, 30 years ago.
Mm.
You know, and that's a whole... I don't know, it's kind of a freebie for them. It's a no-brainer for them. It's a niche that they sewed up and stuff. And, you know, I'm glad that we get our stuff played. Hell, if it wouldn't have been for those songs, I don't know if I would have had a career or been talking to you right now.
Well, exactly. And the thing is that they're playing Carry Me On, My Wayward Son, and Dust in the Wind. You guys still make money off that, even though it's 23 years ago. So, nothing wrong with that either.
Who makes money off of that?
Don't you guys make money off the old songs?
Well, the writer does. I personally, no.
No?
I don't see any money off of that, except for if the albums sell, or if the CDs sell that have them on it. And, you know, that's waning. That is definitely a waning type of situation. The big record sales of Left Overture and Point of No Return went away 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm looking to be current here. I'm stating stuff in the now, and I just urge people to get in touch with what's going on now, And, you know, revere what has been, because that's important. Just like all these rap artists that come out with scratches, and the scratches are of songs that are 30 years old and stuff, and the people who listen to these songs are going, hey, where'd this come from?
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back to the original and listen to that. That's so cool.
Yep.
To plug into, you know. So when people ask me, what do you think of rap, you know, I say, man, you know, it's a whole new thing that's opening up people to where music was 30 years ago. I'm all for it.
Yep, they're certainly doing that. They sample a lot of the old stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is there a website for you yourself, Steve?
No, there isn't right now. I just haven't had time to do anything like that, and I'm not really web savvy, but...
Well, they can keep in touch through KansasBand.com.
Yeah, that and
MagnaCarta,
like you were nice enough to mention earlier on. Those two places right now are probably the best things.
All right. Well, we'll keep you in touch with them and you in touch with them and them in touch with you. And I want to thank you so much for coming on, and good luck with the new solo CD. I like it a lot.
Thank you, Mark.
There's some really great stuff on that. You know, it's funny. I was listening to, I'm trying to think which one of those songs it was. It was Nothing, and it reminded me of some of the classic Neil Young stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Great, I'm glad.
Yeah, it's really good stuff, and you can't pinpoint it. It's got a little folk, a little hard rock, a little metal, a little everything in it. It's really it's a nice CD.
Thank you.
All right, Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.